Blog Talk Radio.
Rhyme ruler, the mind of the master, the prime poet designed for disaster, a crime candidate, the light heavyweight, I might levitate right through the heaven's gate, rhyme record, break neck spines and vertebrae, step on the plane like Kanye, I heard him say, it's murder one when he murder tracks, I'm a dirtbag, flirting with songbirds and Birkin bags, my first rap, catch Roberta Flack, I'm a certified Mac, but I'm sure you ain't heard of that. Slim thugging them hoes, they been loving the flow. They been hunting for men like in Vogue. And I'm in season, the season vet. I don't need respect. All I need is a check. Might check.
It's been too long. It's been too long since I heard Sly. It's been too long since the Blog Talk Radio airwaves came flowing through the Moinax household. It has been too long. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am one of your hosts, Joe Moinax, and I am so excited to be here with you this evening and every evening moving forward. It has been too long, as I've said. Brandon, my co-host here, Brandon Connor, also known as Ball from Grace, it feels like we were talking about before the show began. It feels like we've been away longer, but it's still a long time. It's the longest the show has been off since it started all the way back in January of 2014. But it's good to be back with you, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm glad to know that Mark is not going to miss the rest of the season after, you know, he hobbled off in New York. But things aren't going too great in Grizzly Land right now. Just trying to get through. I mean, the losing streak's over, but still just trying to make it through this December without Conley.
So much has happened. So much has happened. It really is unbelievable how far the Grizzlies have fallen in a lot of ways, how much things have changed since the last time we were on these Blog Talk Radio airways with you. And however you're listening to the show, whether it's live as we record on a Thursday night or whether it's via podcast on iTunes or something like that archived, thank you for joining us wherever you are, however you may be taking us in. Before we get to our awesome guest for this episode of the show, I do want to let you know that we want this to be as interactive as possible. So make sure that you're hitting us up on Twitter at GBBLive. That's the show's Twitter account. And remember, we're giving away Grizzly Celtics tickets at the end of this episode. So if you want those tickets, you need to be a follower of Grizzly Bear Blues Live on Twitter. So at GBB Live, make sure you're following us there. Follow me, site manager Joe Moinax of GrizzlyBearBlues.com, the SB Nation site for the Memphis Grizzlies, at Joe Moinax. And you can follow Brandon, associate editor, great writer for us, does a tremendous job, also co-host of this fine program, at Ball from Grace. So the rundown of the show, Brandon and I, obviously, again, as we mentioned, excited to be back. We have so much to talk about that's Memphis Grizzlies related, and we're going to get right into it here in a moment with our guest. Then after we discuss all things nuts with the Memphis Grizzlies, here at the end of the program, we are going to be giving away two tickets to the Memphis Grizzlies-Boston Celtics game in Memphis on Saturday night, December 16th. Very excited about that giveaway. It's the holiday season, Brandon. We at GBB are in a giving mood, and we want to give to our wonderful listeners and readers. So two tickets, opportunity for you to go watch the Grizzlies, hopefully not on another losing streak as they take on Kyrie and the Boston Celtics with Al Horford and company. So that'll be at the end of the show, but I want to get to our guest right away because he is, first off, he's one of the most remarkable in terms of resume. You know, he has the highest rated, one of the best radio shows in Memphis, Tennessee. He's a national writer for CBSSports.com, and I just have to say he's one of the nicest guys as well. He's been great to us here at GBB. He's been great to me. I've had a chance to be on with him a couple of times on 92.9 in Memphis, and he's been kind enough to give up some of his Thursday evening with his family, some of his time with them to join us here. He is not just a great writer, but he's a darn good guy, and I'm excited to have him back. He is the host of 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis's Gary Parrish Show. He is a college basketball columnist and TV analyst for CBS Sports. But being a Memphian and being in Memphis with his radio show, he talks Grizzlies a lot, and we're excited to have him on with us to talk Grizzlies. Now he is Gary Parrish. GP, how are you doing, sir? Hello, Gary. All right, forgive us here. We got a little bit of technical difficulties as things kind of go through. Brandon, I'm curious as to your take as we get GP on. What do you make of that Grizzlies game? And this will kind of tie into our larger conversation with Gary. What do you make of that situation that happened in New York? Oh, we got Gary. Gary, is that you?
I'm here.
There we go. Sorry. You don't use this thing for too long, and it seems like it'll freeze up on you. How are you doing, Gary?
I'm good, man. You guys okay?
Oh, we're doing great. Right. We can't complain aside from, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies imploding and ownership issues. And, you know, aside from the organization that we follow as fans and bloggers potentially crumbling into a heap, we're doing pretty well. Can't complain. Wouldn't do any good anyway. So let's get right into it here, Gary. And again, thank you for your time. This whole Grizzly season as a whole, we haven't been on the Blog Talk Radio airways. We haven't done a podcast, Brandon and I, in a very long time. And a lot has transpired, and we're not going to try to recap all of that in a 30 to 40 minute podcast. That's not a wise idea. But what we are going to try to do is try to make sense of how we got here in terms of storylines, in terms of narratives. So much of sports and following sports media is narratives. So as this season has progressed, obviously the Memphis Grizzlies not playing very well in terms of basketball, 8-16, lost to the New York Knicks by double digits Wednesday night. They have the very good Toronto Raptors coming into Memphis on Friday. No reason to believe they're going to beat this Toronto team or the Thunder the next night. It's just kind of dark times. And you look at where Memphis was, you know, just months ago with the run that they went on to make the playoffs and then obviously competing with the Spurs. Nobody really picked them to, you know, win multiple games in that series, especially without Tony Allen. It seemed like people were ready to turn the page, but they weren't sure what it was going to look like. So far, Gary, it doesn't look so good. So to you, what is the main storyline? Because there's a bunch of them, and this is kind of a loaded question. What is the main thing that has kind of contributed to this Memphis Grizzlies start?
I think the main thing's obvious, right? It's Mike Conley's injury. Now, it's not completely tied to that, but we said, and I'm sure you guys agreed, you know, all offseason, like, this team can be good if – Mike and Mark stay healthy. Like, it is like this team can be good if Mike, that you always had to, you know, throw that at the end of every sentence. Like, you know, it could make the playoffs for the eighth consecutive year if Mike and Mark are healthy. Well, Mike's not healthy and he's missed a lot of games and it has coincided with a losing streak. And I don't think that's a coincidence. So you go on an 11 game losing streak, but even more than that, I mean, think about where we were through the first six games of this season. The Grizzlies were 5-1. And obviously prematurely and inaccurately, but still ranked number one in some power rankings. I know for sure the NBA weekly power rankings at CBSSports.com. So that's where you were, 5-1 and ranked number one, ahead of the Warriors, the Rockets, the Spurs, the Cavs, everybody else. And since that sort of celebration like that we had just only within the city, because I think everybody understood it wouldn't last, and that the Grizzlies weren't really the best team in the NBA, but they were like two wins over Houston, a win over Golden State. They looked the part. And since then, since that 5-1 start, now they're 8-16. So you do the math on that, and they are 3-15 in their last 18 games. They obviously have lost, I guess it's now 12 of their past 13. So that's the story. And then obviously the firing of David Fizdale. This is a guy who, I mean, just remember how last season ended. Take that for data. People liked David Fizdale. I know he became somewhat controversial because of his activism and his positions, very outspoken positions on President Trump and inequality and Confederate statues. But by and large, I mean, there was a few I hesitate to use the word rednecks, but I think it probably fits pretty well that
probably
were upset fit with him. Just coach your basketball team, right? But by and large, and I think this got lost when he got fired because some people were like, well, that's what happens when a black man speaks up. Maybe in some places, but that black man speaking up in this city was wildly popular, mostly applauded. And so you go from this guy who is not only the highest profile coach of any team in the city of Memphis, but like young, hip, popular, recognizable, wife, recognizable, beautiful, active on social media. It was a really important family in the city of Memphis. And then you get off to a great start, 5-1. oh, wow, Mark looks good. Mike doesn't, but they're still winning. Dylan Brooks better than anybody could have anticipated. Tyreek looks like sixth man of the year. Chandler Parson looks better than we even hoped. Everything's going well. And then, like, within a couple of weeks, you know, it's spiraling. Mike's hurt. Fizz is fired. Mark's a coach killer. Like, it just really flipped pretty quickly.
And it's one of those things that, and again, it was one of the worst. It wasn't the best kept secret in Memphis. Obviously among the media, there's a lot, those who cover the team day to day, you know, obviously being in Virginia, that was hard for me, but you could just see from body language, you know, dating back to last year, Mark and Fizdale were never on the same page. And I'm curious as to your take on that. And I know you've talked about this on your show, but the relationship between Mark and Fizdale, you know, I've done podcasts and other spots and other spot and places and wrote about it on the blog. You know, when you're having to choose between your player who you've invested, you know, upwards of almost $100 million in, and over the course of his entire career, definitely over $100 million. If you're going to choose between that guy who has been a part of the community, who has done everything in theory you can ask of him, aside from maybe buying into coaches' philosophies, and it seems like Fizdale struggled with that, getting Mark to buy into his, if you're going to make that choice between that guy, who's a lot harder to get rid of in terms of trade and things like that, and Fizdale, who has a much lighter load in terms of contract, who you make a call to make a, you know, to terminate a contract, and that's it. It's kind of a no-brainer that they would get rid of Fizdale before Mark, but there was a lot of frustration with that. I guess I'm just curious as to your take, being on the ground there in Memphis, how bad, and obviously the dirty laundry being aired in that Nets game didn't help, but do you think it was – obviously, the organization felt it wasn't able to be salvaged. Do you think they made the right decision in moving on from Fizdale and siding with a guy in Marc Gasol who is close to 33 and is probably coming down from his prime?
I think they made the decision that most franchises would make. I don't know that they made the right one, and I've made this point before. Like NBA history shows that when a coach, with rare exception, tries to take on a star player, like, hey, it's either me or you, and we are not getting on the same – the star player wins that every time. Magic Johnson, Penny Hardaway, LeBron James, Dwight Howard, it does not matter. The star player tends to win that battle. But I think you could very reasonably argue that the Grizzlies should have at least considered going the other direction. And here's why. But first off, if you believe in Fizdale – now, it all starts there. You know, like, I don't know if a star player in San Antonio could take on Greg Popovich, and the Spurs would just sort of shrug their shoulders and say, well, we can't lose the player, so we gotta sacrifice Pop. Like, there's some franchises where that wouldn't happen. I think that's one. Dallas, I believe, is one. Miami's probably one. It's a short list, but there's some places where the coach would never, under any circumstances, get sacrificed by anybody if there was a butting of the heads. And so if you are the Grizzlies and you believe firmly in David Fizdale, like, you got him here and you didn't quite know what you were getting, but you were interested in what you were getting. But once you got him here, you liked everything about him. You thought he was the future. You thought he was a young head coach who was going to develop into one of the great head coaches in the NBA. Then I think you can very easily say, hey, we were, you know, considering at least listening to offers from Mark in the offseason. There are people, smart basketball people, who think we should have already moved Mark. And if Mark is genuinely the problem here, like, if Mark's the one who just won't get on board, let's ride with our young head coach. Everybody else seems to like him. And let's just move on from Marc Gasol, which is what some people think we ought to do anyway. Like, I think that's a very, like, easy argument to make if you believe in David Fizdale. But clearly, they didn't think of him that way. And maybe they were right. I don't know. I know this. I liked him being the coach of the Grizzlies. I liked him and Natasha living here. I liked them being a part of our city. And so I didn't celebrate at all on that Monday afternoon when they pushed him out. But everything I'm told is that, and this comes from people around the franchise, the issues that they had, they both deserve some blame for it. They could have both maybe worked a little better to get along, but they're both such strong-willed, strong-minded, confident, smart, stubborn people. And it just was not going to work. The way it was explained to me was sometimes just two people cannot coexist. And it became clear with these two people. So they did what most franchises usually do. They got rid of the coach. And I think that suggests that they don't have any real plans to try to get rid of Marc Gasol. Otherwise, you don't get rid of the coach. But if somebody else wanted to argue, if Marc Gasol can't get on board with the coach, then let's move on Marc Gasol. Let's keep the coach and keep this thing moving forward. I think it's at least a reasonable argument to make. The only misstep that I think Fizz made, or if I were advising him in the moment, in those weeks leading up to that, in those days leading up to that, I would have said, hey, listen, if you think that you've got to publicly stand up to Marc Gasol, publicly embarrass him, publicly show him who coaches this team and who plays for this team, go to Chris Wallace first, maybe even get on the phone with Robert Parra first, get on the phone with Joe Abadi first, whoever. Make sure they got your back, because there's no turning back from that. There is no scenario under which Fizz was going to be able to bench in such a public way Marc Gasol in the middle of that losing streak at home and not have it be a place where it becomes too far to repair. Like, once you go there, you're not getting Marc back. He takes that too personally, as he probably should have. And so I would have probably advised Fizz, go to your front office and see if they'll stand with you. And if they will, awesome. And if they won't, well, then do whatever you want to do, but at least you know going in what you're doing. My understanding is he did not do that, and maybe that's just who he is. He was like, I don't care. I'm going to do what's right, and if my front office stands behind me, great. If they don't, that's fine. And if they don't, you know what, maybe I'll be out of this bad situation anyway. It's not like I'm not going to get another job. Either way, the whole thing's unfortunate because this city obviously loves Marc Gasol, and I think the city mostly really liked David Fizdale and his family and everything he stood for, and to not have both of them still connected to this franchise. I know not everybody agrees with this. Not everybody thinks that's too bad, but I personally think that's too bad.
Yeah, it just seemed like it was, and I kind of wrote about this, but it seemed like it was like they kind of brought Fizdale in from the beginning to be like, he was known as like a player development coach, and they kind of brought him in to be the next young guy. And then when things went bad here, they just made kind of a brass decision, and I mean, they definitely handled it poorly from a PR standpoint, because Marc now, like the contrast, you see the comments and then he's fired. I mean, the basic assumption is Marc said, I can't handle this guy. And so there's backlash there. And it's just, it's been handled organizationally, like very poorly. And Marc deserves some of the blame. And I think he'd probably tell you that. But it just, from the way they handled it, like there's so much, like the organization, the player, the coach, like everybody, like Fizdale didn't even tell Marc, you know, hey, I'm going to try to run with these guys. Like he just, like Marc went to check in at the table, and then like Fizdale basically just pulled him back and said no, and then never explained any of that to him. So just like there's so much blame to go around on this.
There's no question. And Marc was right, you know, in that post game when he said they wouldn't have done that to Mike. There's a scenario where Fizz might have decided in this alternative universe that Mario Chalmers has got it going and Dylan Brooks has got it going and Tyreek's, hey, we're just going to ride with these guys. But you never don't look at Mike and take 7 seconds and explain to him what you're doing. That they didn't do that to Marc, I think, proves that it was personal. It proves that Fizz was trying to prove a point. And then to fire him, you know, less than 24 hours later, I think really puts Marc in a bad spot, because I do not believe Marc like went to Chris Wallace that night and said, it's either him or me, but like, this is old, like, you got to pull the trigger on him. Or I don't think it was like that. I think they just pulled the trigger. So when Marc says, I was informed, sure, but I was informed after the decision was already made, I think that's true. But I think, you know, these guys have been around the front office, been around Marc long enough. They know what Marc wants and what he doesn't want. They've known that relationship was bad for a long time, and they felt, boom, now's the time to pull the trigger. To your point, there's no way to get around what it looks like, even if it's not quite that, when you do it so quickly after not only did Fizz bench Marc, but so quickly after Marc held that post-game press conference where he was mad. I mean, clearly mad. And so if I were, again, not that I'm a professional consultant, but if I were advising the Grizzlies front office and they came to me and said, okay, this Fizz Gasol thing's not working anymore, we gotta end this, I would have said, give it another week. Don't do it after like literally after the night that Fizz benched Marc Gasol, and Marc Gasol, you know, in a very calm way, went off in the locker room, because that is going to make it look like Marc Gasol pulled the trigger on Fizz. That's how you get Marc Gasol hashtag coach killer. If Marc Gasol is really the guy you're standing by and he's your franchise player, you don't want that on him. Not to mention, plus, like, Mark is not the type of guy who, like, embraces that or is motivated by that. Like, Mark doesn't like to be the center of anything, much less the center of controversy. So if I were in that front office and we had decided Mark and Fizz can't get along, we're standing with Mark, we're going to get rid of Fizz, I'd have said, just, hey, this losing streak, it ain't about to get better. You know, the schedule gets rough. Mike's not back. Let's turn this, you know, whatever it was at the time, 9-game, 10-game losing streak, let's turn it into losing 14 of 15, which are probably going to happen no matter who the coach is. Let's lose 14 of 15, get some distance between the benching of Mark and the firing, and then we fire Fizdale and we stand up and say, hey, you know, this is a business. This is the NBA. You lose 14 of 15. Clearly your team's not responding to you. It's not like we're only losing to the Cavs and the Rockets. I mean, we're also losing to the Mavericks and the Nets. It was time for a change. Then that basically removes Mark from most of, if not all of, the controversy. But doing it on Monday afternoon after Mark was benched on Sunday night, they, as an organization, put Mark right in the middle of this.
Absolutely. So let's try to, you know, make, you know, we've gone through all the negative stuff. But there's been at least a few positives from the early part of the season. So in your opinion, I mean, we could talk about Dylan Brooks. Deontay Davis is starting to show a little bit of promise after a bad summer league. But in your mind, what would you say is the biggest or best surprise to this point?
I think there's three, and we could put them in, you know, some order, and we might actually disagree on the order. But I think obviously – getting something out of Chandler Parsons. I'm not going to use revisionist history here. In the preseason, after watching him play and talking to people, I thought it was more likely by now that Chandler was out of the rotation than Chandler was playing meaningful minutes. He didn't look good. Everything I was hearing wasn't good. And I didn't expect him to be anything other than, you know, 10 minutes a game if you just felt like you had to run him, but not good enough when you watched him play to be in the Grizzlies rotation. Clearly not true. Like, he's a real basketball player again. He's not what he was. He's not worth the contract, but he is, I think, significantly more useful than most people thought he would be in the preseason. So that's terrific. Tyreek, I mean, you got him on a small 1-year contract, and he's been undeniably your second best player. And on some nights, you know, the guy who's kept you in games or won you games. And so that's great for two reasons. A, he's made your team better. But B, if this continues to go the wrong way, he seems to be somebody you could flip to, you know, one of the contenders, somebody who thinks they're just one guard away or one scorer away. And you could maybe turn him into, I don't know what, but a pick of some sort or a young asset of some sort. So you could use Tyreek in a couple of different ways. His nice start to the season could benefit you in multiple ways, depending on where you're trying to go as the trade deadline approaches. And then Dylan Brooks. And I know that he's probably not what we got excited about, you know, in the first few games of the season, but he looks like a real NBA player, a real rotation player. And when guys look like that as rookies, they don't tend to go backwards on you. Like, when guys look like that as rookies, they tend to look like that as second-year players, third-year players, and doesn't mean the sky's the limit. I'm not trying to pretend that. But he'll be a better version of himself next year than he is this year, which means the Grizzlies used a second-round pick and actually got somebody who's going to help this franchise. Given how terrible they've been at picking players over the years, first round, second round, second pick, 32nd pick, doesn't matter, that's been a nice surprise and I think a real positive. So any of those three things I think are good things, even in the middle of what is a mostly bad season.
I'm curious because this was kind of the basis of our GBB Live question of the day as well. And I didn't include Chandler because I knew that people were going to crush me. I'm guessing you've noticed, Gary, I'm a bit of a Chandler Parsons apologist. I didn't want to get destroyed for including somebody. I agree with you that Chandler Parsons is on that list. The names that I included, again, who has surprised you the most in a good way so far this season, and thanks to the over 210 folks who voted in the poll that I posted this afternoon, Tyreek Evans was the runaway winner. He was at 55%. Then Dylan Brooks was at 38%. He finished in second place. Deontay Davis and James Ennis were two that I included. Deontay Davis has looked pretty good the past few games, so I added him in there. And then obviously James Ennis the third. I think he's somebody who doesn't necessarily get enough credit for the level of play that he's bringing to these Grizzlies. I wrote about him in a way to fix the Grizzlies, you know, if they were able to be fixed. Among players that have played at least 500 minutes, he's leading the team in offensive rating. He's one of the top players in terms of overall net rating. You know, the numbers kind of show that he's playing well, and he's doing well playing in multiple spots. He's versatile. So it kind of goes along with what you were saying in terms of there's multiple positives, even within this crap storm of a season. You know, there are things that are actually going well for Memphis. And to your point with Tyreek, I think you can say the same thing for James Ennis. You know, that's another piece that a contending team could maybe look at and say, here's a forward who can play small ball four, who has shown that he can shoot the ball out, he can defend multiple positions. That versatility might be valuable as well. So when it comes to a tank, quote unquote, it may not need to include a Marc Gasol trade or something like that. It could be getting rid of rotation players like James Ennis and Tyreek Evans, trying to get as much value for them as you can since they're on the last year of contracts anyway. I believe Ennis is. I know Evans is. And you know, you get value for that, and then you try to reload with a lottery pick and a healthy Gasol and healthy Conley and Chandler Parsons continuing to do well, Jamichael Green under contract, and you see if you can run it back. So I think there's possibilities for this idea of a quote-unquote tank without a Marc Gasol trade having to be involved.
And I think that's where we're headed. You know, I think sometimes, and obviously not you guys and most people who would be dedicated to the NBA enough to listen to a basketball podcast on a Thursday night, but sometimes people think tanking is, let's just go out and try to lose. Well, no, that's not necessarily tanking. Like, you put five guys on a court, they're going to try to win. The key to tanking is putting five terrible guys on the court because they can't win no matter what. And maybe not five terrible guys, but you get the point. Put the best, worst team you can put on a court, and then let the L start to stack up. I mean, that's what tanking is. And so how do you do that? If you are committed to, yo, if we were going to move Marc Gasol, maybe we should have just kept Fizz, so let's not move Marc Gasol. And I don't even know if you could move Mike Conley now, because that contract, while deserved, and yes, anybody would have given it to him, given the circumstances, that summer and the salary cap, it's a big number, and it's got a lot of years on it. And, you know, this Achilles thing is not just like out of nowhere. It seems to be a thing with him. I don't think you could move Mike anyway right now. So if you don't want to move Mark and you can't move Mike and you obviously can't move Chandler, then you're tied up to those contracts no matter what. So how do you, if this season's clearly going nowhere, and I think statistically speaking, like you start looking at, you know, all the analysis of, you know, win projections right now, like it would take not a miracle, but something closer to a miracle than normal play for the Grizzlies to actually extend this playoff stretch to eight consecutive seasons. So if you acknowledge that, like you reach a point, and I think as a franchise, they can probably reach that point in the next couple of weeks. Like if you reach the point where you, okay, we ain't going to the playoffs, but we're also not moving off Mike or Mark or Chandler because we can't in some cases and we don't want to in the other, then what do? Yeah, you start to look at anybody, literally anybody else. You know, what can we flip them for a pick? Flip them for young players. Flip them for, you know, just anything you can get to make you worse now so that you are stacking losses, but then to also give you an opportunity to be better later. And what that does is make you worse now because you're playing either younger players or just you don't have the same caliber of guys. And so but that also does is give you a better opportunity to get, I don't know, the fifth pick instead of the 13th. The seventh pick instead of the 12th. And you guys know as well as I do, it's a big, big difference between picking, say, 4th and 11th in an NBA draft, between picking 6th and 15th in the NBA draft. I mean, you know, you can get a different caliber prospect. Now you got to get it right. And you can get it right at 12 and miss it at 5, or get it right at 5 and, you know, miss it at 2. This franchise has done that. But I do think that's where we're headed. I think what you'll find out as the trade deadline approaches is everybody who might have value is on the table and willing to flip, even if it's for, you know, quarters on the dollar, willing to flip them for any kind of picks, any kind of young assets. Let's get bad now. Keep Mike, keep Mark, keep Chandler, and then come back with Mike, Mark, Chandler, whatever else we got, and then hopefully we add a lottery pick, maybe even a top 10 pick, top 5 pick, because as somebody who covers college basketball, I think you can get a potential future star, not a definite, but a potential future star, maybe 1 through 5, 1 through 6, 1 through 7. So if you can get in that range, I mean, you're talking about having an opportunity to draft, I mean, depending on how ping pong balls go, Marvin Bagley, DeAndre Ayton, Luka Doncic, Michael Porter, Colin Sexton, Miles Bridges. Like, those are the type of guys, those guys I'm mentioning, who can come in and help you immediately. And then, you know, it would just be kind of fun, given the rosters that we've watched and enjoyed over the years. But think about Mike and Mark playing with, like, a legitimate, awesome 20-year-old who projects as a future NBA All-Star. Like, that would be something we haven't had in a long, long time, if not ever. And so that would be fun as well. And I think that's probably where we're going to end up.
That'd be really cool. I agree with you. And definitely we'll have you back on down the road if it does come to that point. So just to get you on the record here, and you kind of answered it there, I just want a definitive. Sitting here today, they are about 4.5 games out of the 8th seed in the Western Conference. I've always said, you know, call me a Christmas when it comes to this team. And you mentioned that a little bit with you in a couple of weeks. That might be where we are. And obviously it'll be Christmas time. I am curious, long term, do you think for this organization, is it better for them, as you know, with the ownership stuff swirling, which is an entirely different conversation, with all of the uncertainty, is it better for them to try to, or not try to actually be able to extend that playoff streak, give the fan base something to chew on in terms of that, because they are proud of that, whether national media or national sources think they should be is irrelevant, because Grizzlies fans do kind of hang their hats on that. Is it more valuable to them long-term to do that and try to continue to keep the fan base appeased in the face of this chaos? Or do they, I mean, it might take care of itself, but do they kind of commit in these next couple of weeks to that kind of controlled tank we talked about?
Oh, no, I don't think you commit to the controlled tank now. Like, you know, right now it is still possible, you know, to be in the playoffs. It's statistically unlikely, but still possible. I'm with you. Around Christmas, you know, January 1, let's start looking at it. My only thing would be, and this is, you know, whether you're looking at buying a house on a certain level income or, you know, projecting whether you're going to be in the playoffs or not. Like, people have a unique ability, myself included, to lie to themselves, to look at a picture and see something that's not really there because you want to see it. I can remember being a college kid, like straight out of college, and I bought a BMW. I was at the commercial pill, not making enough money, making nice money for a 23-year-old, but like not making enough money to own a BMW. And I can remember my dad and basically every other a real adult that I knew saying, like, what are you doing? Like, you're going to throw a certain level of your paycheck, portion of your paycheck into, like, that's not, and on paper, I had figured out how I could make it work. But then I can remember my father saying things like, yeah, but you're not thinking about this. You're not thinking about that. You're not thinking about this and that and that and that and that. These things are going to happen, and then you're going to be in a bad spot. And, of course, it was exactly right. But I wanted to believe in something that wasn't real, so I just, like, convinced myself that. My point, and what could be, I acknowledge, a very poor analogy, is that you can't be the Grizzlies front office or fan base and look up in December 30th and go, you know, but like if we get hot, go on a 9-game winning streak, then we'll be right back in this thing. Like, don't be silly. Right now they are 8-16. The 538 blog at ESPN suggests that the 8th seed in the West is going to be a 43-win team. That's what it's going to be. You're going to have to get around 43 wins to be the 8th seed in the West. That means they got to go 35-23 the rest of the way. And they're playing some of those games, obviously, with Mike Conley. Can you do that?
Ooh.
Probably not. Probably not. And keep in mind, just because they're 8-16 now, like, they ain't really an 8-16 team. They're an 8-16 team that started 5-1. So what they really are is what they've been since that 5-1 start. Can they go 35-23 like a team that has gone 3-15 in the last 18 games, is that team going to become a 35-23 game team the rest of the way? Probably not. And so if you want to still keep shooting for it now because you're only however many games out of the eighth spot, that's fine. And you should, because it doesn't really benefit you one way or another to tank right now. Like, either you win right now and you get closer to maybe actually being in a playoff picture, or you lose right now and that's the equivalent of tanking anyway. Like, losses all count the same whether they're intentional or not. So I think for now you keep playing. But if it gets to a point, you know, around Christmas, January 1, where it's very clear what you are and what you're not going to be able to do, then you start taking it a little more slowly with Mike, be a little more cautious with Mike, and you look to move anything of value that makes you better now, but that some of the franchise thinks, yeah, they can make us better now too, let us give you this for it, and this being a pick, an asset, whatever, then you don't hesitate to pull the trigger on that thing. Don't hold on to a dream. I do this all the time as a Mets fan. Like, I'll look up and it'll be early August and they're like 8 games out of the East, or but they got a series coming up with the Nationals, and I'm like, you know, but like, you sweep the Nationals and then like, you're right, and you're not going to sweep the Nationals. It doesn't happen. So like, I lie to myself all the time. I try to think they're in it when they're just clearly not in it. And I would hope that the Grizzlies fans and front office wouldn't be, I guess I'm saying, as stupid as I am when it comes to the Mets dreaming about things that are never going to happen. Once it becomes clear and that you're not getting there, then understand that staying as far away from there, I guess this is a decent way to put it, is the best thing you can do. Once you're not going to get there and that's clear, then try to get as far away from there as you possibly can, because it helps you in the draft.
I do have a quick follow-up.
Go
on
ahead,
that.
Brandon.
Like, one of the issues that I think, like, has kind of kept the front office holding on to what's there, and you mentioned this, like, some of the outsiders, people who, like, cover the NBA, don't necessarily cover the Grizzlies specifically, but they talk about, you know, you should have traded Mark or Mike already or moved on from that. But I think a lot of some of that is financially driven. Like, the Grizzlies are not like the Sixers, where they can just commit 5 years to just a dead tank, because you're basically imploding your revenue, and they've already, like, as the financial reports have come out, you know, in the off season, they aren't necessarily the most financially profitable franchise from that aspect, in terms of a net loss. But how much do you think, if, you know, things are going poorly, as you said, and they're not looking like they're going to be able to make the playoffs, and, you know, they're not necessarily, if they look at that and they say, well, we really need to start over, how much of that do you think would be motivated? Like, can they say, well, we can't necessarily start over, we just need to try to wait this out, because, like, if we trade Mark and try to move on from that now and rebuild, the fans are going to, like, the stadium's going to be, you know, less filled. How much do you think that plays into it? And how much, like, the ownership situation is a big question mark right now. Do you think that plays into it at all?
I guess I would say this. Any smart front office, like, considers every aspect of everything. But I truly don't believe the motivation for keeping this together is, if we don't keep it together, the fans are not going to show up, and then we're going to be losing money. I don't think that's the motivation. Like, the season tickets at this point, they're sold. Like, you know, like, whether the fans go to the games or not, those tickets are sold. You know, basically what you are as an NBA franchise, unless you are wildly surprising in a positive way, basically what you are is how many season tickets did you sell, you know, at the beginning of the season. And so those are already sold and paid for. And so I don't think that would come into play. I think the main reason that – and I don't think it's really ever come into play. I think the main reason that the Grizzlies have always rejected outsiders' suggestions that they should, quote, blow it up and try to get bad so that they can be great is twofold. A, everybody always says you got to blow it up so you can be great. For every team that blows it up and then gets great, like the Boston Celtics, there's like three or four that blow it up and just suck forever. Like, they just never get any good. And so, like, if there was a guarantee, like, if you could promise me, if the Grizzlies blow it up in 4 years, they'll look like a championship contender, blow it up. I'm happy to do that. But for every time you blow it up, you get really, really bad. And then usually you just stay bad, you know? So I think that they're smart enough to understand that. There's no guarantee that blowing it up actually does anything. And then I think the market matters. You know, one of my colleagues at CBS Sports is Rajah Bell. And we were doing an NBA show one time, and this topic came up. And the host asked Rajah, what should the Grizzlies do? Should they blow it up? And I thought this was smart, and I also, like, appreciated it. Rajah looked at me, and he said, Gary, you know that market. You tell me. He said, I need to understand the market before I can tell you what they ought to do. And I thought that was interesting because he's somebody who used to work in the Cleveland front office. Like, he's a smart guy. But he understood. Like, you know, in some markets, you know, just being mediocre won't play. But does it play in Memphis? And I think you guys would agree. It's fine. Like, the Grizzlies fans like just being good. I mean, everybody wants to get LeBron James, Kevin Durant win a championship. But just being good is good enough. It doesn't mean that you don't aspire for more. But I do think this is a market where winning 44 to 51 games, going to the playoffs, having those moments downtown – and giving you a fighting chance. And, yeah, more often than not, you're going to lose in the first round. But, man, when you advance, it's fun. And even when you don't, it's still kind of fun, at least in a game or two. You know, the Grizzlies didn't advance past Golden State a few years ago. But, man, what a fun series. They took a 2-1 lead. We got Tony Allen doing first-team all-team, all-first-team defense. Nobody will ever forget that. And so I think the front office wisely recognized blowing this up to try to get great someday is way more unpopular in this city than just going out and saying, okay, best case scenario, we're going to be the 5, 6, 7, or 8 seed. And so I think that's the motivation. Like, they've decided we're going to try to be good for as long as we can be good, because that registers in this particular market. And, you know, that, I think that's a smart thing to do. I think that was the right play. I've always been in favor of that. And when it ever gets bad, it gets bad, and don't lie to yourself and try to pretend that it's not, but at least give it a solid effort to try to stay good, and I do think that's been their motivation this whole time.
These next few weeks are going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out. Gary, we've gone over on time. I'm so thankful for your time. Thank you so much.
Going over on time is always going over on time. That's always my fault. When I host my own podcast, when I host my own radio show, I can't tell you how many podcasts I go on. Like, I should probably, like, open my eyes, look in the mirror a little bit. I go on a radio show and a podcast, and they go, well, you know, we've gone too long, or I didn't mean to keep you this long. I'm like, yo, you don't have to apologize. It's always my fault. I apologize to you.
Nothing to apologize for. Great stuff as always. Thank you, Gary. We'll have you on again down the road.
I'll see you guys. Bye.
All right. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Gary Parrish. Follow him on Twitter if you don't already do so. Chances are you probably do. At Gary Parrish CBS. He's a college basketball columnist and TV analyst for CBS Sports, and he's the host of the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM in Memphis. Brandon, a lot to digest there from Gary, and again, we're kind of up against it for our time as well, but I'm kind of curious as to your take. Like I said, I'm team call me at Christmas, and it sounds like Gary's the same way. You give it a few more weeks, see how it looks. If the process continues down this road to where they're, you know, 10 games under 500, where now they have to go, like he said, 35-23 sounds daunting already. But if it becomes, you know, 33-17 just to get to 43 wins, at what point do you throw in the towel and not necessarily trade Mark, but you do kind of explore the idea of a Tyreke Evans trade, a James Ennis trade, or if somebody like Cleveland is willing to part with that Brooklyn first-round pick, maybe you do entertain the idea of trading Mark. How do you think this kind of plays out, or at least how you think it should play out, if things continue in the manner that they are? Because as Gary said, and I agree, that's the most probable outcome at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's really they're just going to have – I don't see how you can – predict anything right now other than they just play it by ear. December was going to be tough anyway, even if you were full strength, and now you're missing Mike, and then Mark, I guess I never saw like an update officially on what his foot was. But I mean, if he gets banged up, you have to worry about that. You've got other guys that are like Parsons is still on a minutes restriction. And so you've got all those. So December was going to be tough anyway, but now you're just like, you're going into a gunfight with a knife and a butter knife, basically. So you kind of look at how that plays out. Once I think you probably have to wait until Mike comes back until you get any real definitive answer. Like, see what the team looks like with Mike back and healthy. And if they're okay, then I think you can play it a little bit closer. Maybe you don't flip Tyreek if you're not getting, you know, fair value because they kind of need him at this point, just in terms of shot creation, off the bench, even when Mike comes back, because otherwise you're running, you know, Harrison and Chalmers out there as your backup point guards. And so I think you wait and see what the team looks like when Mike gets back. And if it's still bad, then you probably start, you know, trying to, you know, get a little bit of what you can out of your pieces. Cause you're not going to be able to pay Tyreek next year, probably what he needs. And so that's probably the line that I would draw is like, once Mike comes back, get a look at him, maybe 5 to 10 games if you've got the time, and then see what you're doing in January, because that's when the schedule softens up a bit, and then take it from there, just based on what you're seeing out on the court, wins and losses in there.
According to the Grizzlies PR Twitter account, at Grizzlies PR, the injury to Marc Gasol was a right knee injury, and they've released the injury report for the Raptors game. The usual suspects are out, as you just alluded to, Mike Conley, Wayne Selden with his right quad. It sounds like he's got essentially what Kawhi Leonard has, which is not good. He's out again, and then Brandon Wright with his groin. They're all out. Marc Gasol's not even on the injury report. So I'm guessing that means Marc Gasol is fine, which, considering how bad that looked, is the exact opposite. You know, I thought it was going to be, you know, not a lot worse than fine. So it looks like Marc will be good to go against the Raptors. It's a waiting game, and I agree with you. Hopefully Conley will be able to be back in the next week or two. You can get 5 games or so, see how he looks. My concern is if they get Mike Conley back, let's say Mike Conley comes back by, you know, I have the schedule in front of me. Let's make Saturday, December 16th, kind of the aiming point where he comes back against Boston. And, you know, that first game back after Boston, they've got Golden State, they've got Phoenix, they've got the Clippers, Phoenix again, then they're at the Lakers, at Golden State, at Sacramento. They're on a West Coast road trip heading into 2018. So using our call me at Christmas / New Year, like Gary said, the New Year idea, if you get Mike Conley back and you have 8 games of him and you look at your record and you're 3-5 or you're 4-4, it's kind of that lying to yourself thing. And I'm so glad Gary said that. I was going to say something similar to that, but he said it better than I ever could. It's the lying to yourself, the looking in the mirror and saying, oh, I didn't put on that much weight. Or it's the, oh, no, everybody, you know, that no one's going to notice that zit, you know, that kind of thought process. But the zit is the Grizzlies just aren't a good basketball team. They're not good. And it comes down to, if you're going to be 4-4 or 3-5 with Conley in the fold, you know, 4-4 might be even worse. Because, again, if you go 4-4 and you're able to hover around 500 with Conley there, you know, that doesn't help you because you are starting so far behind. And now, instead of falling back to the point where you could be that top 5 or 6 pick like Gary was talking about, now you're hovering around that 12 or 13, and that is a major difference potentially in terms of value. So it's an interesting situation, so important, each game moving forward, for reasons that Grizzlies fans probably didn't want. We all kind of knew that this was going to happen at some point. It looks like it's upon us now. We're finishing up here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I'm one of your hosts, Joe Mullinax. I'm joined by my co-host, Brandon Connor. Thank you so much for listening and listening live. Those of you that are listening live, as promised, it's time for your opportunity to win Grizzlies tickets. We have 2 tickets to the Memphis Grizzlies game against the Boston Celtics in Memphis on Saturday, December 16th. Here's how you can get those tickets. You were supposed to be following Grizzly Bear Blues Live, so hopefully you're already doing that. If you aren't, do it right now, because this is the first person that's able to do this thing. Brandon, I don't know if you know this, but I started Grizzly Bear Blues Live back on January 16th, 2014. I was still living in Memphis. Almost going into 4 years now, Grizzly Bear Blues Live. This is our season 5 premiere, because one of those years we did 2 seasons within 1 year. So this is season five. Season one started on January 16th, 2014. And what somebody's going to have to do to earn these tickets, I'm going to make them work for it, Brandon. They're going to have to go back into the episode archive, look up the January 16th, 2014, the original episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. And I probably shouldn't be doing this because it was bad, because it was my first time ever doing it. But you go back, you look up that.